I am so excited to have one of my most treasured friends and one of the probably iconic superheroes of the entrepreneurial community to talk with, interview, and interact with right now. His name is synonymous with being an entrepreneur because his books, The E-Myths and all the derivatives, have transformed the thinking of successful business owners the world over. Michael Gerber, I've been a very, very great fan of your work since I first was introduced to it. Number two, I have found you to be one of the most agile and amazing entrepreneurial minds. It's an absolute treat to have you for this purpose.
Well, thanks, Jay. It's delightful.
And you have such a rich body of understanding. What I want you to do with, for me, but really for all the people listening, is share some what I'll call universal perspectives that you believe are critical, vital, essential to a nascent emerging field.
But what's missing every single place I look, Jay, and you know I've worked with more small businesses, more would-be entrepreneurs than just about anybody in the face of this earth in my 77 years of being here. What's missing typically are two very essential things. First of all, something worth pursuing. Now, please write that down in your mind of minds. And, Jay, you know when I speak to you of your mind of minds, I'm speaking about this enormous font of innovation and creativity that you've brought to bear in all the work that you've done. Please bring that to your mind of minds, that the very first and last and most important criteria is something worth pursuing. Now, understand, you can say that from a financial perspective, but I would say that more from an ethos perspective. Something worth pursuing, something worth living for, something worth dying for. And hear me when I say that as well, that unfortunately, in this age that we live in, there are very few things that people really engage in worth dying for. I mean, truly worth dying for, which means truly worth living for. In short, people piss away their lives on the most ridiculous of ridiculous of ridiculous things that really have no meaning when you cut right down to it. And so, worth living for, worth dying for. Very, very, very critical. That's the one thing.
All right.
The second component is something worth living for and dying for that is absolutely immutably, absolutely unchangeably scalable. And that means it's got to be capable of being spread everywhere. It's got to be a system. It's got to be an extraordinary system. It can't just be an ordinary system. It's got to be an extraordinary system that blows people away, that can be implemented and leveraged in the most unequivocal way. And everybody knows when I speak about that, I use the exemplar, which people laugh about today because it's so unsexy. The exemplar I talk about is McDonald's. And I say, if anybody listening to me on this call could honestly say that I have created a company, an enterprise, a model, a business concept that is as rich and diverse and as absolutely scalable as McDonald's, I'd then say, then what's the meaning of it? And so those two things, absolutely critical.
I love that. So let's stop for a minute, because what a lot of people don't realize is trying to have a cottage business, trying to have a lifestyle business. I did a little sermon, which I don't think you and I, we talk a lot. People don't know you and I have a very stimulating and deep and very provocative dialogue. But I had a very interesting take that a lifestyle business today is a license for ruination, because it either grows or dies. It has to, and if you grow it, it profligate, you end up with cancer. If you don't grow it, you end up basically withering away. I mean, you almost have a forced necessity to think the way you're talking, don't you think?
Oh, absolutely. In fact, that terrible, terrible, terrible epithet called solopreneur that was built to, in fact, endear the creator of that epithet to all of those people doing it, doing it, doing it, doing it, busy, 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 knocking their brains out, doing something that is so self-interested and uninteresting from an entrepreneurial perspective. They then labeled them solopreneurs, and I'm simply saying it's a misnomer. There is no such thing as a solopreneur. A solopreneur is an epithet that doesn't go anywhere.
I had a comment years ago, a very prominent economist and I were having a long debate, and I said, in my mind, most economic pursuits are nothing more than elongated promotions waiting to implode.
Right, exactly.
And I've had, and so let me give you another level on this. So I've tried to be this voice of tough love, reality, and I've said, look, if you want people to do business with you, you've got to add more value. If you want people to do business with you, you've got to understand all the options they've got, including the most insidious option, which is inaction, procrastination. You got to be able to overcome all of those kinds of things, and you got to have a better assessment about what value means to the marketplace you are trying to attract, appeal, control, dominate. Because if you don't, you can't. And if you do and you can't cost effectively render it, it's moot. You got any, I'm just throwing out some interesting thoughts for you.
Well, of course. I'll give you a perfect example. I just had a conversation with a guy who came to me from, I don't know, LinkedIn, Facebook, Twitter, from my website. The reality of it escapes me. But the guy contacts me, and I hear these plaintive stories by the tens of thousands, Jay. They just come to me from everywhere around the world. And he's telling me this terrible story. He lives in Alberta, Canada. And he's in his late 50s or early 60s, and his business isn't working, and it's doing this and it's doing that. And so he says, so I'm coming to you because I've read everything you've ever written, Mr. Herper. And I know that you absolutely know what's missing here and what I need to do about it. Please, please tell me, what do I need to do about it? So I immediately tell him what he needs to do about it. And it's a very, very simple decision. Do you understand? I give him something to do, a first thing to do.
And
then there's silence. And then there's silence, Jay. And then there's silence. And then he signs up for the thing that I tell him to do. Now, understand, this is a man in his late 50s, early 60s, who's at the end of his rope, living in the freezing cold of Alberta, Canada. Hopelessly entrenched in this thing that is going nowhere but down. And I give him something to do. Now, I'm the voice of reason. I'm the voice of logic. I'm the voice of entrepreneurship. I'm the guy he's been reading all these years.
Yeah.
I'm the guy who he's finally come to speak to, and I give him something to do at a cost, Jay, get this, of $2,995. Do you understand? And it's going to take him 12 weeks to do.
And
I tell him that's the first step, the absolutely essential step to liberate him from his thinking and open up the possibilities that exist within him to do something he has never done before.
And his response?
And he signs up for this thing.
And
then he emails me to cancel.
It doesn't surprise me, and let me tell you why. You and I have parallel but different careers. I've had the good, I'm not going to say bad or sad, but let's say it's a form of incredulity. I don't know what the right word is. I've had the most interesting ability to watch people who purport that they want to grow, who purport that they want to build a successful enterprise, who purport that they want to create a meaningful value in their world, in their society, and then when you tell them the reality-based activities that are required, they're shocked. I mean, it's hilarious. I've seen more people when they realize that an enterprise needs nourishment, capital, you probably don't make any money, You get rejected more often. You get accepted. You got to pivot and fix the model before you really can have it resonating and delivering even reasonable profit. No, that's not what I want to hear. That's not my reality.
But you understand that that's what's so extraordinary. You say incredulity. That's what's so extraordinary. They have no idea how to do it. And so they come to someone who does have more than an idea how to do it, has already done it again and again and again and again, and is in fact willing to reach out to them and to provide them with the key to it. And then they start telling you, yes, but, yes, but, yes, but. And I'm sitting there saying to myself, what's missing in this picture?
So let me take this lament, the Portnoy's complaint, and let's attach it to a corollary, and let's attach it to an insightful alternative worldview for somebody who does not want to be engulfed in a miasma of theoretical aspirations and non-achievement. So what do we want to tell people? And you have a lot of people emerging into this field. You have a very interesting confluence. I think that's the word I want to use, or certainly an integration of I used on one of my presentations, When Worlds Collide, because I see all these people, old school coming into new school, young people with incredible hopes, dreams, aspirations, both financially and causal and purpose-driven, all converging on an industry that they don't really understand is going to be just as brutally competitive and just as unforgiving when it becomes really mature as any other one. Give me some. I'm sort of trying to dribble and pass to you, and I don't care really what you say. I'm just trying to be this font of mature logic that will benefit almost anybody at any place in this emergent and nascent industry, because I think it's going to be very interesting.
Well, the first and most essential thing that has to happen is, I call it, a blank piece of paper in beginner's mind. In other words, let go of everything you believe to be true. Start out with a blank piece of paper in beginner's mind. Now, that sounds like a mantra, and it is a mantra. It's my mantra. And I'm essentially saying that because every single time I get into a conversation with somebody who purports to want to, going to, is absolutely purposefully driven to, they're starting with assumptions that, in fact, don't make sense. They're starting with assumptions which we've got to break through. And so rather than starting with assumptions that don't make sense, that we've got to break through, I'm saying let's start at the beginning, which is zero. So, Jay, you know, I know, zero is where the opportunity is. Because if I have to start having a conversation to break down all the original assumptions that somebody's bringing to me, I can't even begin the task of actually helping them to move out of the box they put themselves in into something I call no box. No box is where we need to be. No box is where the opportunity is. No box is absolutely clearly that Zen character, that extraordinary character. I think he called it Zen mind, beginner's mind, that great thinker, the first guy to bring Zen Buddhism to the United States, Suzuki. Zen mind, beginner's mind. This is not philosophical.
This is not
just spiritual. This is factual. This is as pragmatic as anything anybody could possibly do. So somebody who walks into the school, call it Zen school, call it entrepreneur school, call it small business school, call it any school at all, walks in with a clean slate. Otherwise, I'm not interested in talking to them. It takes too much energy and time.
And I'm going to interrupt you, but not rudely, just to make a parenthetical comment. One of the biggest tragedies, and it's also been one of the most liberating, expansive, I guess, opportunities I've had, is most people spend their entire world with whatever, their entire life with whatever kind of a vertical and linear worldview that they've come from, either from their background or the one or two industries they're in, and they project that reality everywhere. Well, one of the things that you've seen and that I've seen is when you work in, you know, all over the world and you work in 460 or 80 or 500 industries and you see every facet of the gamut and every spectrum of commerce being generated, retail, wholesale, aggressive, sophisticated, mundane, everything, you know how much more is possible, and you hurt for people who have limited theoretical vision of what they're doing, how they're doing it, who they're doing it for, and why they're doing it. And it's almost, you almost want to cry for them, and you want to scream and kick and say, open your window of your possibility. God, please. I mean, I think you're saying the same thing in a more eloquent way.
We are. And so you see, it's so critical. So we're speaking to all of these folks out here, this crowdfunding universe, from every perspective, whether it be the funders, whether it be the creators, whether it be the builders, whether it be the, and so forth and so forth and so forth. I'm essentially saying that what we're speaking about is true for every single one of them. Understand, you were talking about jobs some time back. The Jobs Act, et cetera, and so forth.
Yeah.
Understand, it's so absurd to even be talking about jobs. Do you understand? It's so absolutely outrageous for the government to be presuming to talk about jobs as though the government is going to create anything other than jobs, government jobs, that everybody out here is going to pay for. That's not where jobs come from. I call it the jobs effect. Play on words. The jobs effect means jobs are creating by a guy named Steve Jobs, a guy who is an entrepreneur, a guy who is an inventor, a guy who is a creator, a guy who starts with nothing, with a picture that is beginning to formulate in his mind about an outcome that nobody had ever conceived of before. It wasn't just sitting out there as a problem. It wasn't even sitting out there as a reality. It was sitting out there as a zero. Nobody had even asked for it, wanted it, thought about it, considered it. Nobody was interested in it until he invented it. And so this extraordinary opportunity you're dealing with here, Jay, this opportunity to truly invent a new world by starting with a question, what's missing in this picture, is what, in fact, really turns me on.
Yeah, that's
exciting. What, in fact, has enabled me to do the work that I've done with all of these tens of thousands of small business owners who, when I met them, were stuck in a box, and I just abolished the box.
That's great. And it's good. I'm smiling. It's very cute. And not cute in that it's just, it's I'm thinking about all the different spectrums of people at all the different levels of age, experience, understanding, aspiration. But it all comes down to one thing, and that is, you're right, what's your vision, what's your capacity to see what's missing, what's your ability to concretize, to make tangible, to deliver or over-deliver on that, and what is your capacity, as you say, to scale, replicate, continuously provide that at a qualitative level that keeps improving and certainly not lessening, and keeps you in the definitive role of superiority. It's a very interesting question, and I'm not sure we're going to have answers, but I want to now switch you and ask you three different questions that I'll be very curious to hear your answers. And the last one will be probably the funniest, but the first one is, of all the different distinctions, principles, all the laws, the ideologies, the methodologies you have personally created, developed, given birth to, or been influenced by or observed, what's the one single most that you haven't already talked about that you think has additional universal implication? Because I'm just obsessed for people to see that there's a collection of elements, issues, factors, forces that either you harness, you basically make them your servant, or they basically decimate you. What else are they?
Well, that's what I've been saying all my life. I say go to work on your business, not in your business. It's in order to transform your business. You've got to transcend your business. You've got to see it from above. And the thing that is most difficult for everybody to do is to get out of there. So I like to say to every single small business owner, entrepreneur, whomever I ever am asked to speak to about what's the single greatest thing they could possibly do in relationship to the company they've got, and I would say to them, move out of it. Move your office 6 blocks away. Do not have your office in your company. Get the hell out of there. And why would I say that? Because until you get the hell out of there, you have no idea the negative impact you're having in there. In short, you believe your office is a part of your business, and it's not. It's a part from your business.
Now, I want to tell you something interesting, and I have marveled at two interesting dichotomies. You've probably had a more profound effect on more people with that phrase, work on, not in your business, than I would say about anyone else I know of or I have known of, other than perhaps Deming, who had a really cool phrase about the system, etc. And it very much concurs with you. But this is where it gets very interesting. Most people, they get impassioned, they get inspired and animated by that thought, but they do not know what it means transactionally. They don't know how to work. They don't understand what it means to be strategic, not tactical. They don't understand what it means to see their business in a different context. And you've got to have seen that, because in all the work I've done, you've done, a lot of our contemporaries have done, they understand with such clarity, but a lot of their fans, their champions, their students, their proteges, their clients get it but don't get it, if that makes sense. Is there any more crystallization we can give people?
Absolutely. And you're right. You know, I'm constantly asked to come talk. I'm leaving tomorrow for Mexico. I'll be speaking in two major events, one in Mexico City, another in another part of Mexico. And they tell me, you know, everybody here has read your books. Everybody here has read your books. Everybody here has read your books. And I know inside of my heart, they may have read my book, but they don't get my book. In fact, I tell them, absolutely every single one of these people who read my book have not done the most important thing they could have done. And that is to read the quotes at the beginning of every chapter of my book. And those quotes weren't just randomly picked. I didn't go to Quotes R Us to get the quotes at the beginning of the chapters. I've read those books. And what they don't understand is those chapters are all about something significantly deeper, broader, wider, more creative than, in fact, the chapters themselves reveal. So the second thing I would say, if work on it, not in it, is the most critical, then I'm saying that in order for you to work on it, not in it, you must see yourself as what I call a master of business design. A master of business design. And what is a degree, a master's degree in business design? It's visual design, it's emotional design, it's functional design, and it's financial design. If you leave any one of those components out of the creation of your company, you have leveraged your company incapable of truly performing as a totally holistic enterprise. You failed to see your business as your product. You get that? The business is the product, not the hamburgers, not the french fries, not the Coke or the coffee or the tea, not any of the commodities that are being sold, but the business itself.
No, I'm sorry, my phone rang, and I was feeling emotional. I wanted to march, man. That is so incredible that I don't think I'm going to ask the second question, because I think you preempted it. I'm only going to ask the last question. What do you think the biggest question that I or anyone else who interviews you, have interviewed you, will interview you, they fail to ask that they should? because it's so important. And it's one of those questions that it's hard for you to just insinuate it without it being asked. But you always go, darn, why didn't they ask, like, what is it?
Why didn't they ask, why is this so important to you? Why is this so important to you? You know, people say, you've got such enthusiasm, Gerber. I mean, my God, if I could only have your enthusiasm at 60, forget about 77. Why is this so important to you? And the reason is because life is. And people don't get that. They don't get that. They just don't get that.
I get it. That's great. That's the most wonderful conclusion. And if they don't get that, then I not only have empathic, but not pitying, but sadness for them, but I pray that their competitor doesn't get it, and they don't. Thank you, Michael. You are a profoundly stimulating and a enormously, infinitely, and admirably passionate advocate of entrepreneurship. It's a pleasure
Thanks,
to
Jay.
Have you as a friend.
A delight. Thank you.
Bye.